targeting Venezuela, or is it something more to do with Trump as well? And the Americans seem to be targeting them now, and why?
You have to understand that all American refineries in Florida, they were built up and specialized in on heavy Venezuelan oil. Recently, in recent years, or before Hugo Chavez and during his reign, all oil came from Venezuela to USA refineries, and they used it. After that, after reality has changed, it was Iran and China and Russia who entered Venezuela and started to work there. Trump is closely connected with ExxonMobil. You remember last his term, his Secretary of State was Rex Tillerson, ex-CEO of ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil has interest in east of Venezuela. They occupied some territories and some shelves that Venezuela has claimed as its own, and they look at Venezuela as their area of influence. During that year, especially in July, before 1 month before the incursion, pro-democratic Chevron has entered Venezuelan market and started to work there, in the area where pro-Republican ExxonMobil operates. So there is a huge conflict of interest. Also, Trump has a lot of problem with CEO of JP Morgan Bank. JP Morgan is a main British company who possesses a huge actives inside Venezuela. And JP Morgan possesses all the debt of Venezuela. It's like $156 billion, I suppose, dollars. And only JP Morgan, a single company, can decide if someone can invest in Venezuela or not. On 6th of August, Trump had a quarrel and a fight with CEO of JP Morgan. After 2 days after that fight, he declared urgent need to fight narcotics, and after 1 week, he sent his fleet and fighter jets to Caribbean Sea. It's like, you know, policy of a big child who tries to be a bully and to just frighten his own opponents.
Carrying on with American politics, who do you think killed Charlie Kirk?
It doesn't matter who. We can talk about conspiracy theories, about that plane that stood in America for like 1 year and departed just 20 minutes after Charlie Kirk was killed. We can talk about Netanyahu, who was the first one who expressed his condolences with Charlie Kirk killing. We can talk about Charlie Kirk criticism of ultra-Orthodox in Israel and cabinet of Netanyahu. It all doesn't matter at all. Right now, we can only think about how Elon Musk, Trump, other politicians, Thiel, after all, and all big tech giants who are with MAGA movement and Trump, how they use that situation in order to press their opponents and press pro-right, or sometimes radical agenda. If we look at USA as some kind of cauldron, we will see that Democrats hoarded it from left side. BLM, liberal agenda, transgender, everything. After a while came Trump, and then he started to hot that cauldron from the right side. But cauldron is boiling, and the cauldron is United States. And now United States are more ununited and has more problems than ever since their civil war, I suppose.
And why do you think that is? Because, of course, we keep hearing of Russian interference in America, and I don't know whether there's some bots or some journalists or whatever, but it seems very clear that America is dividing itself. America is boiling itself. What do you think? Why? And do you think people are increasingly talking about civil war? Do you think that is a possibility?
Well, civil war has not ended. People right now have their own problems and beliefs from that time. It has been like, what, 200 years, right? I'm not kind of much in American history, but something like that. More than 100, okay. And still now they remember about it. And still now they have some ground for hate. But right now they have a highest criminal rate ever. they have a lot of migrant people, Spanish-talking people, who possess weapon, who just don't want to be part of normal society, who kill Ukrainian refugees, someone other, on just matter of hate. So if you have such kind of a joker inside your country, you cannot just be sure about stability of your country.
Let me also ask you, I think you've criticized immigration in Russia recently, and it seems clear that if you look at Britain and Europe in particular, the immigration issue is the number one voting issue, and it's changing governments, and it's threatening to destabilize society. And Russia doesn't have the same problem as Western Europe, but there is clearly a problem in Europe and in Russia with population loss and migration. What do you think is the solution to that?
Well, I see immigration as a global weapon to change people and to change whole nations. For example, I just mentioned JP Morgan. One more time. It's a British company who possesses one other country, Venezuela. It's quite ridiculous and maybe impossible. But if we assume that there are a lot of companies like that, like we call them transnational corporations, transnational corporations don't need some ground. For example, we see that Britain was huge and great. It was empire that has never seen a sunset, right? But right now they have a lot of Pakistani and Bangladeshi and other migrants there. They just continue to threaten their own population, and their special services became weaker and weaker, as well as military. But their private companies continue to grow. They are like parasites who just control all valuable resources. They sucked up people, they took everything they need, and then they just moved to other locations. If we assume that such kind of corporation existed in every country from Europe, and then they decided to just suck all the resources from there and move to some other locations with better climate, with better nature and everything, maybe somewhere in Asia or even in Russia.
Because it seems clear that the war in Ukraine is damaging British and European interests. They have a very small chance of defeating Russia, and yet they're continuing to do it. Britain is damaging the living standards of its own people. Because they want, these corporations want Russian resources, and they think there's a chance that they might be able to defeat the Russian army. So they're willing to sacrifice the whole of Britain just for a chance for these corporations to get hold of these Russian resources.
Or maybe it's not about that. Maybe it's just about continuation of sucking that resources from Europe, and they use Ukraine as an excuse. Because right now we don't see any reason behind that, except they just has already abandoned Europe.
Shines above, you're the reason I never give up, you're the one I try for, live my life for, give up all I have, you're the melody, you're the key, all the inspiration I need, and when times get tough, I know you'll stand by me, you are the love I need, the one who has got. And you know my destiny, for you are the light, and you are my life. Oh 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 oh
send me a piece, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more. No more. No more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers and sisters, salam and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. Today, let's pause and ask a question. Where does true strength come from? The gym, muscles, status, wealth, what? Imam Sa'a al-Salam once said, "Inna quwwat al-mu'mini fi qalbih." The strength of the believer lies in his heart. But what is that strength in the heart? And how can we grow it? Let's start with science. Researchers in psychology and neuroscience have found that resilience, the ability to bounce back after difficulty, doesn't come from the body but from internal states or our beliefs, values, and emotional regulation. According to the American Psychological Association, emotional strength, including patience, forgiveness, hope, is more predictive of long-term success and well-being than IQ or physical strength. This matches what Islam has been teaching us for centuries. Let me give you an example. In a 2017 Harvard study, individuals who practiced purpose-driven reflection every day, like prayer or deep spiritual thinking, showed stronger heart rate variability, meaning their hearts were literally stronger and calmer under pressure. The body follows the heart. Back to Imam Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. When he says the strength of a believer is in their heart, he is telling us something timeless. True strength is not the ability to fight others, it's the ability to remain firm when the world shakes, it's the strength to forgive when you can't take revenge. It's the patience to do what's right, even when it's hard. So we see this in the lives of prophets as well. Prophet Yusuf alayhi salam had no army, but he had a heart that forgave his brothers. And Imam Hussein alayhi salam stood on the day of Ashura, not with worldly power, but with a heart unshaken by fear or desire. Yeah, and you see that after the Karbala, post-Karbala events. Lady Zainab, salam alayhi, Imam Sajjad, alayhi salam, they stood firm in the face of injustice and tyranny. And so, how do we develop this strength in our own hearts? Here are three practical steps. Ask yourself, how is my heart today? You check your heart daily. You ask yourself, am I angry, afraid, bitter? Then breathe and speak to your heart. Guide it with a verse or a dua or a value that you have learned from Ahlul Bayt, from Quran and the Holy Prophet. Next time someone provokes you, pause, smile inside, say, oh, this is training for my heart. That restraint, it's spiritual weightlifting. And remind yourself, I live for something bigger than this moment. So next time life tests you, remember this hadith. Don't say, I am weak. Say, my strength is in my heart, and my heart is with Allah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh دانش.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Salam to all tuning in. This is Iran Radio, broadcasting from the beating heart of Tehran. I'm here to welcome you into a world of conversation, culture, and insight. Iran Radio presents some interesting facts about the Holy Quran. The word Bismillah appears 114 times in the Quran. It occurs twice in chapter An-Naml, whereas chapter Tawbah is the only surah which does not begin with Bismillah. Quran believes in life after death, and the Quran teaches us that besides having a body, a human being also has a spirit, a soul. And when a person dies, the physical body vanishes, while the soul remains. Coming up now, another captivating segment of radio productions. Then it's time for Youth Station, a program created for young minds, navigating modern life through an Islamic lens. Topics include faith, friendships, personal style, prayer, and finding a shared identity in today's world. Next, don't miss Spotlight. So stick around, there's more to come.
Travel south, starting from Tehran. Drive for about 450 kilometers and you reach Isfahan. But don't stop yet. Go yet another 25 kilometers east and you'll reach our destination, the city of Najafabad. Najafabad was first established by Shah Abbas the Great in the 16th century. That's about 400 years ago during the Safavid period, and has many beautiful castles and buildings within. Today we're going to show you three of them. The Nurian House, the Husnije Caravanserai, and the Ibrahim Khan Citadel, starting with the last one.
An enclosed space of about 1.5 hectares with winding alleys and time-worn walls that remind you of the historic forts of old Persia. This is the Ibrahim Khan Citadel. That's about 10 kilometers to the west of the city of Najafabad in the province of Isfahan. Apparently, this small citadel has well over 40 houses, some of which were still occupied up to about 30 years ago.
Before these 6-meter-high walls and watchtowers were built to secure the safety of these houses, this was a small village known as Shahdan, which is why sometimes this whole structure is called the Shahdan Citadel. This is one of the few small citadels that was built during the Zand and Qajar dynasty for commoners, who were mostly farmers and animal breeders. Each adobe house has two small rooms, a kitchen and a small yard. You can also see wells in some of the remaining houses. The architecture of a citadel reflects not only the defense tactics of each historic period, but also the social structure and economic status of the people living at that time. Stand still and look around. Could you have lived as they did, sharing everything in peace and tranquility? With that said, it is time to head back into the city of Najafabad to pay a visit to our next location, that is the Nurian House. The Nurian House can be found in one of the historic neighborhoods of Najafabad called Nasir. As soon as you open the age-old wooden doors, you are led into the main courtyard through a vestibule with big flooring. The Nurian house was made in the image of the homes built on the central Iranian plateau. The courtyard is decorated with mirror flower beds to the sides and a beautiful heart-shaped miniature stone pool at the center. The facade of the main building is eye-catching indeed and is a modest example of the native architectural designs in this region. The porch, with its four delicately decorated arabesque capital head pillars, leads to the main room of the outer courtyard through wooden lattice doors with paisley designs. The ceiling of the porch is also decorated with 8-point geometric inlays. In addition to the inner and outer courtyards, you can also pay a visit to the kitchen that's undergone restoration and has a working oven, ventilation, and a display of the varying kitchenware used by the women of the household. The small stony pool is probably where watermelons were floated to cool during the summer. In the good old days, family and friends would gather around the pool and enjoy each other's company. We have to say goodbye to the Nurian house as well, if we want to reach our final stop in time. Our last destination is a memento from the Safavid period that was registered on Iran's list of National Heritage in 2000. There are many caravanserais scattered all over the province of Isfahan that were built over a time period of 10 centuries, from the 9th to the 19th century, since back then Isfahan was on one of the main trade routes of Central Asia. Back in their glory days, these caravanserais were a place of culture, trade, tradition, and most importantly, a safe haven for any caravan or traveler who passed by. And perhaps the most interesting of these places were the ones that were built in the middle of the desert, in the middle of nowhere. Caravanserai literally means a dwelling for caravans. They are widely known for their remarkable architecture that's based on geometric equilibrium, each having a unique character. The courtyards are normally surrounded with bedrooms, depots, and bathrooms. Here too, you can see ceilings blackened by soot, a common sight in dusty places like this. The soot helps prevent dust falling on the heads and torsos of visitors who sought shelter and rest in these chambers and under these small domes. Unfortunately, except for some of the really well-known caravanserais, especially those that are inside urban areas, many have been forgotten over the course of time. This is Golnar Farnoodi for Iran.
Each other, that this day will be the last, and tomorrow we all can go home free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islamidi. Islamidi. Allah my Lord. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Youth
Station.
This is Asma, and I'm so happy to be here.
And this is Masuma.
I hope wherever you are, you're doing well and everything is just fine with you. How about you, Masuma? Are you okay?
Yes, thank God. What comes to your mind when I say strong people?
Well, I think the matter of being strong depends on how you define this strength from different personalities. I do believe that strong people can at times swim and go against the currents. So when the society, when the trending thing is telling me that you have to wear, for example, this specific kind of, I don't know, t-shirt, whatever.
Yes.
I don't think, okay, why do I have to do that? I don't think that I'm obliged to do it. I think that I have my own school of thought.
Yes.
I'm talking about that a strong person.
It's not that easy to change your thought.
Yeah. So the first thing that comes to my mind is that you're strong enough to stand up for your own thoughts. And you have a school of thought. I always define strong people to have a school of thought for themselves. Like other people, like the entire world, cannot define a school of thought for me. I already have it. And where does it come from? From somewhere very strong, like the narrations of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, like the things that God have taught me in the holy book of Quran, and also in the practice of everyday life, because experience has got some singing to do for you.
And if we don't do that, we're just going to turn into puppets.
That minions.
Trends and social media and social norms are going to, you know, decide for us. And
yeah,
we have seen throughout the history that these, you know, social norms have not always been correct, have not always been the right thing
often
to do.
Often they are not right.
Yes, and they're just wasting our time.
Yeah.
I would like to define strong people as those people who are, as you mentioned, more conscious, more aware.
Yeah.
And it is very beautiful. So conscious about what's happening around you, what people are going through, and also what's happening within you.
Mm-hmm.
Not only what's happening, you know, to you from outside, and also what's happening within you. See, back then I thought I'm not very stubborn, but I noticed just some while ago that this specific action that I'm doing is out of stubborn. And I could feel that I am looking at myself out of myself. I don't know if I'm able to, you know, convey what I'm talking about. I'm saying that I could feel that I am being a little more aware about myself. And that made me feel a bit stronger. That made me feel that, oh, so this is the reason why I talked like this back time. Or this is the reason why I took that decision. And this little awareness makes me stronger. And if I would want to compare myself to my past self, which would be, you know, my teenager era, I definitely am stronger because obviously we've been through some stuff, and I'm very happy to say that I am thinking a lot more different. And I'm sure that this is not my best version. Hopefully we're going to grow more and more. And now I, you know, value silence more. Although I'm here talking too much, maybe. But
that is required.
Yeah.
But if not, then what is the use of you coming here? Because you have to talk and you have to share your ideas. We're here to outline every single
yes.
thing that comes from experience.
And
so, you know, just as you were talking, I got this point that there's a difference between being stubborn and being strong.
Music.
Welcome back to Youth Station. We're talking about strong people. I came to the point where I valued silence. As a kid, I used to talk a lot. I was a chatterbox. But now I talk less because not everyone, you know, should be talked to. Not everything should be mentioned. Some stuff should be, you know, thought more.
Well, Anne Shirley also talked too much, but she was a strong, I guess. But that's a girly example, but it could work.
So when we talk about silence, we
shouldn't actually mistake it for the part that sometimes there are some people who, even with their words, even if they talk, they are sharing insights with the world. So this shouldn't be mistaken for, like, for example, if someone talks too much, that means they're not as strong. There are some different versions of what a strong person would be. There are, like, a lot of examples of strong people that at the same time, they are good speakers.
Yes, of course.
They are good lecturers, and they can be good gurus. Like, they could actually take you through perfect directions of how to live a life of a perfect life.
Of course, that kind of speaking has come after a noticeable silence, I would say, because that silence brought
education, generally speaking. Education, you know, it comes after education. And education is not necessarily all the time having a book in your hand or going through different courses. No, sometimes it comes like the way Prophet had and the way Ahlulbayt alayhi wa sallam have encouraged us to do. Like, an hour of thinking is worth of a lifetime. So maybe a moment can change it all around. So some people will brood on a daily basis for, I don't know, some hour. They have devoted a special time. They get into the nature or, I don't know, the rooftop of their houses, and then they start thinking with the skies and then think about what's going on in life. And this would actually bring about some insight and would manifest itself in their words.
Yes, you're talking about the strength of solitude.
Exactly.
Which at some point,
it educates you.
Yes, we need to, you know, get away from this chaotic life and think a bit. And obviously, it brings a bit of silence, which in my life, at least, silence was very important because I hated silence. I hated solitude. I thought that I just need to be around people. I should always be around people.
I guess most of us go through that phase at a specific time.
But once you realize, once you have a little, you know,
but you realize
pondering,
that you are a lonesome traveler.
Yes.
And this journey is for you. And sometimes solitude is a must because it's going to uplift you.
It is a must. It is a must. We are alone at some problems. You know, the concept of loneliness.
Yeah.
So that is, again, a kind of solitude. We need to know that how to use this tool, I would say, good for ourselves.
So strong people are not as scared of staying in solitude, of going through silence. They're not as scared of fighting against the currents that is hitting them.
Yes.
And also, you know, sometimes I guess flexibility is a sign of being a very strong person.
Yes, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, contrary to what we usually think of being strong. Like, we usually think that stubborn is the equal of strong. But no, sometimes your stubbornness is a sign of your weakness. Because you do not have the courage to change your perspective and to uplift yourself and to look and see beyond the box.
It highly depends on the situation that is going in specific that part of the life. Sometimes, obviously, we need to be stubborn. Some other times, we need to be very flexible, which, again, is a concept of patience and thinking more and taking different things into consideration.
Yeah.
And flexibility, inflexibility then leads to emotional control, you know. We need to also control our emotions. Those times that I used to let my emotions decide, you know, what to do next, I made wrong decisions.
Yeah, looking back at history and looking at the Islamic heritage that we have, there are many strong role models out there for us. Like, of ladies, since we're ladies, the first person who would come to my mind is Lady Fatima Zahra salamullah alayha, and also Sayyida Zainab salamullah alayha. With whatever she's been through, she stood so firm. So when I think of strong people, the first person that comes to my mind is that woman at, like, she was this old woman at that time suffering from all those scars in her heart, but at the same time she stood so firm, and she was like this strong tree standing in the face of all the trees, of all the storms.
Yes, those battles were not easy, those storms were not easy to fight, and we can see that how, you know, I'm sure they went through a lot of emotions, definitely, and we can see the art of controlling emotion and creating
and resistance,
this beautiful resistance.
You know, resistance is very important. Right now, maybe we can link it to the modern age, to our age, actually. You see, after all of these wars and after all of these battles going on, and media is in itself a battle.
Yes, yes.
If you go through it consciously, you would realize that it really is a battlefield. The thing that would make you stand out is the idea of how much resistance you have in the thought. I talked about flexibility, but there is one thing that delineates the borderline for flexibility, and that is the words of God and the narrations of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. So whenever they come to talk, there is no way for us to be flexible.
Yeah.
Whenever there is the talk of justice, there's no way to be flexible. Mm-hmm. Okay, let them kill the entire nation. What's going to happen? Oh. It's not much of a big deal.
Oh, God forbid.
In here, flexibility is a sin.
Yes.
And so, it's very dangerous.
So a strong person knows when to be flexible and when to be stubborn.
Exactly.
And this does not come easy. And I am a very easygoing person, so I am kind of scared of this. What if I become very flexible with some stuff that I should not be? So that's why we need to, I personally need to have, you know, this moment of silence every now and then to ponder upon myself, my thought, and my actions, if I'm taking the right path or not. And since we are living in the era of social media and all, what do you think strong people do regarding social media?
I don't think, actually, I do believe, let me put it this way and rephrase myself, that I do believe that whatever they do, at least they're not going to show it on social media.
Yes, privacy is
and
very important.
Their cell phone is not going to be a camera into their private life.
So
and
true.
I'm not going to see every single moment and second their life.
They're
I'm
not going to overshare.
Welcome to their rooms, and I'm not welcome to their kitchens, whatever they eat, wherever they go. I do believe that even if they are about to share something, it's going to be a word of wisdom, an insight, something that's going to add to the culture, something that's going to add to wisdom, not just what am I eating, what am I wearing,
it has
and
a
where
purpose.
Am I going. It has a purpose,
it
has
a
direction,
purpose.
And it's
yes.
God. It's not void.
It's not just how, oh, just because, you know, they are doing, I should do as well. Obviously, strong people have their own priorities and they do not show off. They know that showing
and
off
they don't
is
go,
not a
most
thing.
Importantly, they don't go with the currents.
Yes.
Like right now, everybody, every single personality in this world is buying, for example, that stuff. I have to buy it.
Oh, yes.
They are wearing this. I have to wear this. No. They have a school of thought for themselves. This is me, and media is not going to change me. I go there, and it's just a platform to perhaps express my ideas and share it with others and see how the feedbacks are.
I'm
for
a human,
example.
Not a puppet.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I did not work with the politics of the world. Like, whenever red is the beautiful color, I wear red. Whenever black is the one... going with these stuffs, I guess, does not show and does not indicate that you're a strong person.
Definitely. And trends, obviously, never end.
They never matter. Well, let's be honest. Sometimes, as we're living in a world in which all the human beings are a part of, we might be impacted, but that doesn't mean we have to act accordingly.
Yes.
Yes, I see this, I see that, I know what is happening in the world, but I do not think there is a purpose in going for it.
So I would like to end our conversation with...
which is never ending,
yeah,
actually.
Obviously. We just have to end because time...
No discussion in...
Youth Station
is going to be ending in 14 minutes. But the thing is that we have to.
We have to.
It's actually the matter of a have to and must.
I have to leave you by saying that strong people are always a little different from the society, from what other people are doing. It is okay to be a bit different. It is okay to...
It's okay to be you.
Yes. And we should sometimes swim
please
against the current.
Being you. Being you is so unique. And
so
there
unique.
Is no problem in it. And it is actually the thing that adds to the variety and beauty of
authentic,
the world.
Authentic. Beautiful.
If everybody was just like the same, then the world would have turned into a miserable hell.
Yeah. Ugly.
So ugly.
So with that, we hope you are as beautiful as you are, as authentic as you are, and live nice. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings. Be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. Facing a chorus of global condemnation, Israel is confronting unprecedented isolation as diplomatic, cultural, and economic pressure is mounting. This was shown by a mass walkout preceding Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's address to the United Nations General Assembly. The incident symbolizes a broader international backlash against the war in Gaza, which is now manifesting in official state recognitions of Palestine and widespread boycotts of Tel Aviv.
Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has addressed the 80th session of the UN General Assembly. Before he began his speech, many countries walked out of the session in protest over the genocide in Gaza. Speaking to an empty room is another sign of Israel's growing isolation at the international community. This isolation is the price to pay for the regime's murder of innocent Palestinians and rejecting the global call for an end to the bloodshed. Netanyahu has acknowledged Israel's isolation, but he describes it as an unavoidable consequence of the Gaza war. Speaking this month at a conference, he called on Israelis to become more self-sufficient. He said Tel Aviv has no choice for the coming years, and it is required to deal with the isolation attempts. Global outrage over the dire humanitarian conditions in Gaza, including famine, has swelled in Europe and elsewhere as demonstrators demand that their political leaders do more to stop the crisis. In Italy this week, thousands of workers and students participated in a nationwide strike over Gaza that closed ports and some public transit hubs. The domestic pressure has played a key role in pushing European leaders to find a way to act. Several Western countries, including Britain, France and Canada, recognized the state of Palestine this week. Momentum is also building in the cultural space as well. Spain, Ireland and Netherlands have all threatened to boycott Eurovision 2026, the world's largest music competition, if Israel participates. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez called for Israel to be excluded from all international sports, similar to how Russia was banned from the Olympics following the outbreak of the Ukraine war. In the US, more than 4,000 film workers, including A-list stars, signed a pledge this month to boycott certain Israeli film institutions. Despite fierce objections from countries across the globe, the regime is pushing ahead with its genocidal war on Gaza and attacks on regional countries. The regime struck several areas of Yemen on Thursday. Just this month, Israel attacked six countries, including Qatar. For now, it seems that while U.S. backing may shield Israel from immediate diplomatic consequences, it cannot reverse the deepening global alienation. This international isolation appears set to intensify as long as the current policies persist.
Well, here are our guests for tonight's show. Manager of Canadian Defenders for Human Rights, Faraz El-Najem, joining us from Toronto. And we'll also be speaking to Professor of Political Science at Birzeit University, Saad Nim, joining us from Ramallah. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. El-Najem in Toronto. Please give us your perspective on how the Israeli Prime Minister was received at the UNGA this year, the mass walkout from members, the jeering and booing during his address, and of course the widespread condemnations from numerous speakers.
Yes, this is an unprecedented time that we see that the Zionist entity is losing allies, losing friends, and losing any type of support. Even the other systems or other governments that they have some economical relations and some type of benefits together are starting to pull away from the Zionist entity because of the massive amount of crimes and human rights violations and disregard totally to the international law. So this shows that Israel now is being isolated and truly it's the opposite picture of what Netanyahu tried to portray. Netanyahu portrays as if the GDP is growing and the economy is growing and that Israel is more beloved in the world, but the reality today showed in the United Nations that he has no friends and he's losing any type of support. And we are hopeful and hoping that more countries and more governments in the world pull away from the Zionist regime and pretty much suffocate it exactly how they're suffocating the Palestinian children in Gaza. And it's quite clear the type of inhumanity that we're seeing today in Gaza and spreading also to Lebanon, to Syria, to the Islamic Republic of Iran, and also even to the U.S. allies that rely on the U.S., such as Qatar, and we've seen when they bombarded the capital of Doha, and a member of the GCC, Gulf Cooperation Council, and total disregard to international law, total disregard to a sovereignty of another country. It shows that Israel does not care about laws, and that's why the world should, at the same time, penalize Israel and also isolate Israel and make sure that Israel feels the suffering and the pain and what's happening to the people of Palestine for all these years.
Professor Nim, how do you view the massive international backlash against the Israelis, mostly, of course, due to the ongoing genocide and starvation in Gaza? And, of course, going over what Netanyahu said at the General Assembly and the threats that he made, it seems that Netanyahu and the Israelis, they live in an alternate reality where they are the victims and everybody else are the aggressors.
Good evening to you and to your guests from Toronto and to all your viewers. We were expecting this moment anyway, in a way or another. And I don't know if you remember, even on your screen, we talked about that one of the effects of the 7th of October, it will be an international effect. And we said that it will come not sooner, but generally, in midterm or, long term, generally. But apparently, it started and started now. And once it started, I don't think it's going to stop. To the contrary, it's more and more isolation to Israel because of the public. The public, in generally in Europe, in all countries around the world, they couldn't handle this genocide and this country or entity or whatever we can call it, do all these kind of massacres and genocide and famine and starvation and the killing and ethnic cleansing in front of screens, and no one is going to do anything about it. So definitely there were lots of public movements and actions all over the world, and that by the end of the day will affect the governments and the countries. So bit by bit we are now building a kind of a consensus among all the world people against what the Israelis are doing, and we hope that we see more and more actions being taken by countries. I'll give you an example for that. Italy was always supporting Israel, and even during the war. But what happened in Italy in the last week made the government take some actions, and especially sending two frigates to join the Floetta, the ships going to Gaza, and that is a change because of the power of the people. And what Netanyahu is doing, more and more of the killing and the insisting on going on in this killing, definitely more and more people are going to the streets and will take actions, and their governments will start taking actions. So I think that Israel is putting the last nails in their own coffin in this way, and more isolation. He seems that he don't care. And in his speech the other week, he said, Netanyahu, he said that we have to close on ourselves, and we can do that, and we are able to do that. But apparently, they live in a world, and they have lots of investments and lots of money coming from different countries and lots of companies who are now boycotting Israel and all that, and especially the weapon. And all right. That now is going to take an effect on Israel, definitely.
Firas al-Najm, so many speakers at this year's General Assembly not only called for the immediate end to the genocide in Gaza, but they also called for the end of the Israeli occupation of Palestinian land and expressed their support for a sovereign Palestinian state. Please break down this common theme that we heard at this year's General Assembly.
After 75 years that some countries are recognizing the Palestinian state and the Palestinian rights, such as Canada and Australia and Britain and France and some other countries that also jumped on board. But it's still something symbolic, I can say, that gives some credibility and more of a empowerment to the Palestinian people and to the, alienation, kind of treating the Palestinians as if they're aliens and they don't have any rights and they don't deserve rights and they have to truly fight for a basic right. This is a basic right of every nation, and the Palestinians have, been suffering for so many years, and we've been seeing this suffering on social media, on TV, and many people that are also from the region there, the Middle East region, West Asia, have also felt it directly because of family members, because of marriages, different things. It's time for the Zionist entity to fall. It's time for the occupation to be dismantled. It's time for the Palestinians to get their basic rights back and have their identity respected, and for justice to be served. Netanyahu is wanted by the ICC. He should not be speaking in the United Nations. This shows the United Nations lacks true credibility and accountability. They should be holding these people accountable. They should not let somebody like this war criminal and the person that is truly massacring and killing the people, in a very savagery way in Gaza. And everybody's seeing this. Even basic aid is not even being entered, not allowed to enter inside Gaza. This is not allowed in any law, in any book, in any history. And this is what Netanyahu is doing in front of the whole world. And for some reason, they're giving him impunity and a green light. But I think things are changing now, and people are sick, and even the politicians in Canada are sick of the Israeli crimes and lack of respect for any humanity and for the Palestinian people. And now we're also marking the 1-year anniversary of